information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
On this Tuesday, May 2nd, 2023, welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. Coming up this hour, make local control great again. It's far past time for a legislature dominated by a party that advertised itself as being the party of local control to stop taking away local control and stop taking away taxpayer dollars from local units of government that can spend the money better locally. We'll talk to former Lincoln County Board member Hans Breitenmoser a bit about the way that state government and local governments could be getting along better and how you can do that through the state budget or through other means. Chad Holmes will join us later this hour from Bull Falls Radio. We'll talk about things going on up in the Wausau area. And we'll also take your phone calls during our this segment or the next segment, if you like, at 844-967-2789, or send us a note, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Or if you're watching this feed on the Up North News Facebook page or the Civic Media Facebook page, leave a comment right there. And if we see it and like it, we'll put it up on screen for you as well. Aaron Zommers is with us from our studio in Madison. And Aaron, we did some investigating. A little investigative reporting is about to happen right here. We are going to break this story on Up North News Radio after spending a good 8 minutes of research. We were able to answer the question from the last hour, why did the military in 1943 consider the song Roll Out the Barrel to be too lusty to use as a marching song when they were training airmen and troops? How would we best describe what the results of our investigation?
That's right, Pat. Well, today we're bringing you an inexclusive review of the Andrews Sisters version of Beer Barrel Polka, the same song that we talked about earlier. So you can hear these lusty lyrics for yourself.
Please be careful. You might want to keep the children away from the radio as the Andrews Sisters give us the verses that lead up to Roll Out the Barrel. Got to stop. It's getting out of hand here. Now, the verses that lead up to that actually talk all about, young people getting together and dancing, and there's romancing, and they're swinging in a polka. So apparently it's all the lyrics leading up to this about dancing and romancing that do it. So I hope that this hard-hitting piece by Aaron Zommers and yours truly have helped solve the mystery. It really hasn't for me. I don't know about you, Aaron. I'm a little underwhelmed.
Yeah, I guess dancing is just too much for the military to handle.
I guess so. All right, so we've figured that one out. This week, yet before we're done, we're going to come up with the best way for you to help us celebrate teachers next week. It'll be National Teachers Week or Teacher Appreciation Week. I forget what, but we're going to look for a good way for you to share with us the name of an influential teacher and why. And we'd either like to read them, or we'll come up with the right way for you to perhaps maybe email us or text us a little selfie video or a little audio in your little voice memo app in your phone. And we can play those things throughout the next week on Up North News Radio. Our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com, and over on Up North News as well, we will be putting up some articles and features about our favorite teachers. And we'd really like to have your help on that too, in helping us know, who did it for you, who counts, who had that influence that, makes you who you are today. We are going to be talking with Hans Breitenmoser later in the hour about what's happening with the state budget and, how local governments are helped or hurt by this. But one of the big steps in that process is actually going to start later today. The Joint Finance Committee, and again, just as background, that's by Joint Finance Committee, it means it's both the State Assembly and the State Senate. It's their finance committees getting together so that there's only one committee working on the state budget, so the Joint Finance Committee. they have been holding these public hearings around the state. They held their final one last week in Minocqua. And theoretically, what they're supposed to do is take all of that input from the hundreds of Wisconsinites who attended and who offered up some very heartfelt comments at the sessions in Waukesha and Eau Claire and Wisconsin Dells and Minocqua. And then as well, take in the input from Governor Tony Evers and the budget proposal that he made in late February, and consider all this and put it together and create a nice new healthy state budget that they and Governor Evers can agree on. As we've mentioned before, a lot of what gets said to the people currently running the legislature falls on deaf ears. And in a tone that can best be described as petulance, they are going to take Governor Evers' budget officially today and throw it in the wastebasket by stripping out much of what's in it that they call policy rather than, you know, things that are fiscal, you know, budget related, and then write their own. Knowing full well they're going to put things in there that are policy related too. But coming up after we take a break and hear the latest updated forecast from Weatherology, we're going to review some of those things that are going to get kicked out of the budget later today. These are things that have wide bipartisan support across the state. But your legislature today is going to say, you know, thanks, but no thanks. That's coming up next on Up North News Radio. Tunes from Gordon Lightfoot after his passing away yesterday.
Rainy day people always seem to know when it's time to call.
And rainy day people seem like the right thing to play. Before we head into our weatherology update from Jennifer Vachitsky from Weatherology, she is tracking a system that has been so slow to move out of the upper Midwest, and it's getting closer, and the warm-up is getting close. It is sunny and beautiful up here on Lake Wissota, but still, you know, 39 degrees. We could do better. Jennifer, I think we're getting there. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, like you said, it's a very slow and gradual warm-up coming up here. We saw that low-pressure system that came in yesterday, and then a high-pressure system beyond that. So really not a lot of movement as far as those temperatures are concerned. It still also looks like some winter weather advisories in the extreme northern portions of the state today for everyone else. So definitely it looks more spring-like. Wausau down to Oshkosh and in the south, looking at few spotty areas of drizzle potentially in the afternoon hours with cloudy skies today. Some cloud cover in the Richland, in Richland Center, but dry and then sunny in the west central parts of Wisconsin. Everyone overall still below average as that cold front that did push through yesterday is still kind of lingering around. Looks like upper 40s in the central and southern portions, warmer to the west with highs in the mid-50s around Amory and Baldwin as that warm front begins to push through here today. Sunny and warmer for tomorrow for most everyone as that warm front pushes through the whole state. However, still below average for the day. Low to mid-50s in the south, a little warmer close to the lakefront with some cloud cover over there as well around Milwaukee. Mid to upper 50s from Oshkosh over to Wausau and Wisconsin Rapids, and then low 60s around Amory and Baldwin. Again, they are expecting to see that warm front coming in more so here for today, and they'll get a little bit warmer for tomorrow. That'll include also Richland Center. And continuing to warm for everyone on Thursday as well, expecting to be either at or above average, as most of the state should be in the mid to lower 60s this time of the year. Sunny skies for most here on Thursday, a little bit more cloud cover with a chance for some rain closer to the central and west central parts of the state. And then a slight chance for rain across the board here for everyone on Friday, still with pretty seasonal average temperatures.
Which is all fine so long as that wind eventually starts dying. I mean, it howled all day yesterday. It was all I could do not to open up the door and yell enough already, which would have been pointless. But what else are you going to do with a windy day like that? Jennifer, thank you for the weather update. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
All right. From Weatherology, that's meteorologist Jennifer Vachitsky. In sports, there is a three-game series for the Brewers against the Colorado Rockies starting tonight in Denver. Freddie Peralta will take the mound. And as we mentioned an hour ago, there's an article in this morning's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from Todd Rosiak and Kurt Hogg saying that when you consider the injuries that the Brewers have had to deal with, They've actually done all right at 18 wins and 10 losses. You've got some pitchers who are missing a considerable amount of time, or others like Aaron Ashby, who are out for the season. You've got position players like Garrett Mitchell, who's out for the season. Luis Arias won't be back until at least the end of this month. And yet you've got some other players who've really stepped up. Brian Anderson, Bryce Durang, Joey Weimer, Wade Miley, Devin Williams. And so given all that, you know, 18 and 10, pretty good. Three games in Colorado starting tonight, and then three games in San Francisco as part of that road trip before they work their way back here for a homestand. And of course, as whenever the Brewers are at home, as we have tickets to give away, we will do those at 6:50 in the morning, and would love to have you get a chance to win those seats to American Family Field. All right, we were talking in our last segment here, setting up the what's happening with the state budget. And the things that are not going to be in it, at least right away, after action that's taken today at the state capitol by legislative Republicans, who, when they first came into power, said things that obviously sat well with a lot of people. They said they were going to be the party of local control. They said they were going to be the party of fiscal responsibility by not putting policy items in the state budget, that it was just going to be about, you know, money. What we've learned over the years, of course, is that this is a group that will not hesitate to remove local control, and has done so in dozens and dozens of ways over the dozen years that they've been in power. That while they will remove what Governor Evers puts in there in terms of policy, they will put their own in there. And we've seen what the priorities are like for actually spending the money in the budget. Again, continuing to call for ridiculous items like a flat tax, which is nothing more than a massive giveaway to people at the highest income brackets and does nothing for people at the lowest end. But to come back to the policy items, those are going to be stripped out today when the Joint Finance Committee meets following all the public hearings that concluded last week. And some of the things that they're taking out that Governor Evers proposed are hardly what you would call a liberal wish list. These are things that have broad bipartisan support, things that would benefit families, things that would benefit the economy. It's not to say some of these things might not get put back in, and it's not to say some of these things might not pass a separate legislation. But what I'm saying is that it's an unnecessarily longer budget process because they feel the need to play this game. If you were in the legislature, if you and I were there, and I from my time in there, I knew plenty of other rank and file legislators who agree with me from both sides of the aisle. We'd get in a room and we'd say, okay, how are we going to do this? How do we want to do this? I was telling you last week about a longtime Republican state Senate leader, Mike Ellis, from Neenah. And he's not with us anymore, but when he was one of the last of those characters, if you will, that if you got to talking to him either in the Capitol or outside the Capitol, if you were at a local watering hole, he's the kind of guy that would take a napkin, turn it over, you know, grab a pen or whatnot, and y'all would start talking, and you'd look for how you meet in the middle on various issues. It certainly didn't make him any less a Republican. It didn't make him any less a thorn in the side of Democrats whenever, you know, he felt the need to do that. But you also know what your job is about, and your job is about crafting a budget for all of Wisconsin, for all the people, and to do it fairly, and to do something that can pass so that you can get on with the next job. Remember, this is a legislature getting paid over $50,000 a year per legislator because they're one of the few legislatures left in the country classified as full-time. This is a full-time job. And yet, twice in the past couple of years here, we've seen Republicans gavel out of session in late February, early March, stay home for the rest of the year, do no legislating, and collect a paycheck for a full year. So these guys are hardly in a position to be lecturing others about, you know, nobody wants to work, and so let's punish people through the state budget. Instead, we could be working together, the legislature and Governor Evers, to say, okay, let's start with some of these policy items. Legalizing marijuana. Overwhelming support. We are an island now in the Midwest, more or less. And Wisconsinites can go across the border to Illinois. They can go to Michigan. They can go to Minnesota. And they can pay money there for products, which includes tax money. That's tax money that's going to other states, going to their schools, going to their local services that we're not getting here. And again, it makes no sense for Republicans to continue opposing it, because it's not that there's a massive constituency telling them not to. There's paid family leave. Now, again, if you want to take care of the labor shortage, you take care of childcare costs and worker flexibility for dealing with things like family emergencies. That's where family leave comes in. And one of the things that Governor Evers proposed is using some of the surplus. Yeah, by the way, have I mentioned yet again, there's a record $7 billion surplus. Take some of that to solve problems and try new things that address the labor shortage, like creating a paid family leave program, which for the governor gets started. You need a little seed money. So you start it with about $240 million in one-time funds. After that, it would be funded like unemployment compensation through a payroll contribution that is split. And under the governor's proposal, workers could take up to 12 weeks of paid family medical leave starting in 2025. Payroll contributions would eventually cover the program. It would be self-sustaining by 2026. There's childcare, $22 million that would work to support partnerships between businesses and childcare providers. And I want to emphasize that you can hear a Republican saying, oh, there's the governor spending $22 million, you know, on a childcare program. It's not handing out checks to people. It's for partnerships for businesses who want to provide affordable childcare to their workers to make sure that they don't face an ongoing labor shortage as people leave. Again, these are not difficult concepts. There's some that admittedly are a bit less bipartisan. Well, let me put it this way. No, they're bipartisan. The Milwaukee Brewers Stadium, American Family Field. The governor includes state funding there, as there was state funding to help build the stadium, which gets me back to Mike Ellis from NINA and the story we told, you know, a couple weeks back about, getting state funding in that bill. But again, that stadium needs a lot of improvements, like any facility does after, you know, a quarter century. And Republicans are going to strip that out, which again means we get to play the game of how hardball will the Brewers get, how hardball will the state get, before we look at the potential that the Brewers look to leave after their lease is up. And if you don't think they will, you really haven't been paying attention to major league sports. There are all kinds of other things that are in there that include Evers' proposal for a 10% income tax cut targeting middle and low income earners. Again, 10% tax cut for the middle class, not a flat tax just for the very wealthy, a 10% tax cut for middle and low income earners. In the last hour, we talked about child labor, that the Republicans' answer to the labor shortage was to loosen child labor restrictions, whereas the governor is looking to help children who are more anxious than ever, facing more issues than ever, with a budget item that would add more mental health providers in schools. Republicans are going to take that out today. Freezing enrollment in the state's private voucher school program. The Republicans are going to take that out because, again, they want to fund two parallel school systems in Wisconsin. Can we afford that? No. Not even with a record budget can we do that. I want to find one or two quick examples before we go to break here again. Broadband. $750 million investment into broadband expansion grants. Affordable housing programs are in there. Of course, Badger Care expansion, the Republicans are going to take out. And affordable school lunches and breakfasts. If we can't agree, like we said in the last hour, on making sure kids don't go hungry at school, what are we even doing here? What are they, those lawmakers, even doing here? We'll talk to our friend Hans Breitenmoser about these issues and more coming up right after this break. You're up north.
They just pass it on.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Picking up the pieces of my sweet shattered dream.
It has been brought to my attention that my internet connection might be a little glitchy today, so allow me to offer my apologies if the line isn't entirely clear up to Lake Wissota, and we will look into that and try to make that better for you and more clear. But somebody who is very clear is Hans Breitenmoser. He's going to be joining us in just a minute. But I did want to wrap up the discussion on what the Republicans in the legislature are going to do today to strip out some of Governor Evers' policy proposals from the state budget bill. We had a caller earlier, John from Madison, didn't want to come on air, but he noted in terms of the labor shortage that another element of that is pay. And that, again, Republicans have had the legislature for a dozen years. They haven't raised the minimum wage once. It's stuck. And you may argue, well, yeah, but most people aren't getting paid minimum wage because of the labor shortage. True, but there will always still be employers looking, to pay however close to poverty they can, rather than provide a competitive wage. Governor Evers put in there raising the minimum wage. And again, Republicans are taking that out today. And then finally, a couple of other policy notes that would be in there: automatic voter registration and repealing, the union busting right to work laws that were put in by, Scott Walker and friends years ago. And again, those things are coming out despite public support. And a spokesperson for Tony Evers said that what it shows us is that Republicans have no real plans to address the pressing challenges facing our state. She writes, if I were a Republican Party that had lost 14 of the last 17 statewide elections, I would simply not reject wildly popular policies supported by a majority of the state. And I would append that with, but you do you, boo-boo. So we'll see how things go there. Hans is up in the Merrill area. Mr. Breitenmoser, how are you?
I'm well, Pat. How are you doing today?
Very good, thank you. And again, we always learn about why the one thing in the budget that we should keep in there is expanding broadband service so that we have higher quality internet to places like Merrill and to Chippewa Falls. But we push on through as best we can. Look, you attended one of the Joint Finance Committee meetings, the last public hearing in Minocqua last week. What were your overall impressions of, what the legislators were saying and what the people were saying who made the trek out there to plead their case for this or that to be in the state budget?
Well, it was interesting, and I'm glad I went. The reason I went up there was to help speak in favor of an expansion of Badger Care, because I feel like small businesses and farms should have access to quality, affordable health care. And I think it's an economic driver, and that's exactly what I told the group. So I was glad to go and do it, but I was frustrated a little bit, Pat. I'm not going to lie, because, there were so many people there. The place was packed, which is great, because, that really shows that there's people interested in speaking with their legislators, and I think that's what it's all about. But one frustration that I had is that, you have this dais full of legislators, and, everybody knows that it's a long day, and I'm not going to begrudge anybody for taking a potty break, but some of the legislators were were gone, like, out of the room for like 50% of the time. And sometimes when they were in the room, they were chatting with the person sitting next to them while people were testifying. And I was just kind of staggered at how I just felt like that is so rude. People were coming from far and wide, hither and yon, taking their entire day and waiting patiently the entire day, a lot of us, because I spoke at 3:30 in the afternoon and I got there like at 9 in the morning because you don't know when you're going to speak. So that was a little irksome. I think they could change it up and say, you know, make a 2-day deal out of it and you know, take some breaks or whatever. But when you're in the room, you know, like be in the actual room and be present when you're listening to people testify, because this stuff is important. And if as legislators, they claim they want our input, then by God, they should be, you know, actually present for the thing.
I'm about to jump in on it because, again, I don't know that they necessarily want the input. I think they're doing it because they feel like they have to. And now, look, I'm not going to tell you that every Democratic lawmaker, you know, was perfectly well behaved. I'd sat through a Joint Finance Committee session as a state senator. I wasn't on the committee, but when they do those public hearings, and this particular one was in Eau Claire, they have the hometown legislators, you know, up there as well. So I was up there for hours. And yet, yes, I definitely got the impression, you know, which legislators are actually want to listen. They're taking it in. They're learning information, and which ones are not. And yeah, I'm sure there were a couple of Democrats where I kind of gave them the evil eye as well. But by and large, you know, over these past 12 years or so, it has definitely felt more like a chore for this majority to have to take this show on the road. People have to come, give the impression that they're kissing the ring, and then they're going to go, you know, and do what they're going to do anyway. And when you have that few hearings, of course, people are going to come from all over. They're going to make the long drive and sit all day and say, this is what we want, or this is what we need. As you were listening for those, you know, 6+ hours before it was your turn to speak, what were you getting from that, from hearing all the previous speakers?
Oh, there was just a wide variety. There were a number of people who came from local government talking about roads and infrastructure. So it was sort of interesting because some of the things that you were just talking about earlier were the concerns out in the hinterlands, you know, that people are really strapped in terms of the, you know, townships and counties were represented there, in different ways. School districts were represented, nursing homes were represented, and it's the general theme of, okay, we've stretched these pennies as far as we possibly can, you know, and of course each one of these disciplines, or if you will, are coming with their own issue in hand, but it speaks just to the larger issue of, you know, just not enough revenue sharing has been going on for way too many years.
Right, and so let's get into that one for a moment. We've hit it a few times. And that's because it's an important thing. The revenue sharing component has changed so dramatically since it was first, you know, created in Wisconsin over 100 years ago. Wisconsin was a pioneer in the concept of, hey, we're taking in all this income tax revenue and then later sales tax revenue, but the services are being provided at the local level. And way back in 1911, according to the Wisconsin Towns Association, 90% of all state revenue was directed to local governments. And nowadays it's less than 10% of state revenue goes to local governments. And now, don't go back to 1911, go back just to 2003. The Towns Association says that if county and local aid had simply kept up with inflation, it would be funded at $1.5 billion, which is an increase, which is basically, you know, double, more than double what it is today. And again, Hans, nobody's saying the state government has to go back to 90%, but it is clear that, you know, somebody overshot the mark and that a course correction is needed.
Well, for sure. And I think it's also illustrative of how, you know, partisan politics and hypocrisy are alive and well, because, you know, you look at just the comments made, the little bit that it looks like we're going to get back now, in every other sentence about it, they, you know, the right talks about inflation. So it's the spinning of the narrative that's a little eye roll worthy. At the local level, you know, we'll take whatever we can get, but it's there's no doubt about it. It has been mismanaged for a lot of years, and that's why so many school districts and nursing homes and so forth, but school districts in particular, going to referendum constantly. This is not something that we saw a generation ago that now is the norm, you know, and it's because there's just not enough funds in these rural areas.
And in these rural areas, Hans, I have to wonder, when you talk about eye rolling, this has to be happening again, because what we're hearing again is about consolidating services. And consolidating services can be done to a point. But again, when you're talking about, oh, it's all waste, fraud, and abuse, and if they would just, you know, run more efficiently and consolidate those services. Well, coming back again to the Wisconsin Towns Association, looking just at the ambulance services, you have 70% of ambulance services are some form of volunteer. They're strictly volunteer, or volunteer with part-timers, or volunteer that gets paid per call, whatever the case may be. 97% of town ambulances are provided already jointly or through purchase services. And the same goes for fire services. 98% of town fire services come from some form of volunteerism. I don't really see the waste, fraud, and abuse that you're going to get by making, by forcing more consolidation.
No. And at the local level, I mean, you know, again, I was on the county board for 10 years. We're not anti-consolidation. We have partnerships with different entities and different in counties and whatever else. I think local government has been, you know, pioneering that in many ways, you know, because we've been in this fiscal situation out of desperation. But the notion that there's so much fat to trim, and we just need to be more efficient by working with other counties is sort of ridiculous, because we've been doing that for a long time.
Well, exactly. And how many more times can you go to the well on that and say, well, there's waste, fraud, and abuse, and there's, we have to look out for the job creators, which is really kind of shorthand now for the biggest businesses. So to try to make this more forward-looking, again, with your 10 years experience as a county board member, and knowing full well we're dealing with a Republican majority, so this is, you know, the answer has to be somewhat realistic, shall we say, given who's in charge now. But if you could get this legislature to do something different than what they've done the past decade or so, is there a single thing that you wish it would be?
Oh gosh, I don't know. it always comes back to funding, and I think certainly it just has to do with dollars and cents and how we prioritize things. You were glitching out there, but one of the things you mentioned was prioritizing creating jobs, which is code for supporting the Foxconns of the world and great big businesses at the expense of Main Street. We've got a situation here in our county with our nursing home. The nursing home is, you know, threatening to be shut down, and we're trying to figure out how to save it. It's a county-owned nursing home. There's 150 jobs there. And so sometimes we tip over and fall over ourselves trying to, you know, create jobs by luring businesses into an area. And then in the meantime, we let our school districts and our nursing homes twist in the wind. Well, there's a lot of jobs that are important to the community that already exist. So rather than sit there and ignore them, while we're looking for another big box store or a foreign-owned manufacturer, maybe we should focus on that a little bit. But in order to do that, we need a proper shared revenue situation with the state. We need a relationship with the state that's not the disingenuous relationship and the prickly relationship that we've had, but rather a partnership that it used to be. And again, I'm not suggesting we go back to 1911, but
no,
my God, if we could get to the early 2000s or late 90s, I think we'd have something.
Partnership would be great instead of continuing to exacerbate, you know, the divisions between rural and urban residents, where we have a lot more in common than people want to say. Hans, always great to talk to you. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Pat. Take care.
All right. Coming up next will be Chad Holmes. He'll join us from Bull Falls Radio. That's after this. You're up north.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
This was not my idea, but I think Aaron's come up with a pretty good walk-up music for you there, Mr. Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio.
I think it kind of works. I've been running around. Miles and miles.
I mean, there is not a rink or a court or a diamond that you haven't explored in that area for, you know, doing sports and covering the news and talking to folks from 2 to 4 p.m. weekdays on Bull Falls Radio. You can also hear the show through the Civic Media app or through the Civic Media website. You can subscribe as a podcast. Tell us about some of the topics on your recent shows.
Oh man, it all runs together sometimes, but
doesn't it though?
Yeah. Yesterday I had Nancy Stensel on talking about the many things that she's up to. She runs around, I think, more than I do.
Oh, she does. Yeah.
She was down in Madison last week, just talking to some folks who are elected officials, and she had some interesting stories to talk about. Some of the people she talked to spoke about. It's amazing, and you know it. I mean,
I do.
Some folks down there are so on top of it, and others, I think, don't get it. Yeah. And it's funny to hear a little bit of the background on it. But she's also going to be taking a lead in the 7th Congressional District in terms of the Democrats, in terms of trying to build the party in the 7th to try to make it a more competitive district to hopefully put a little more heat on Tom Tiffany. And it's interesting to hear about that, because it's not going to be an easy job. She is somebody that tends to go up some pretty steep mountains, and very, very impressive.
She very much does. She's somebody who definitely has cleats on the hiking boots for the mountains that she has to climb. And I did see her in Rice Lake last weekend at the 7th Congressional District Democratic Convention. And she is somebody who has been just tireless. And whether it's on, you know, environmental issues around that area where there's talk of, you know, potential, you know, mining exploration or what have you, or all of the various political issues, she understands that district has its fair share of, progressive residents and voters and moderate residents and voters, but that reaching people in that big of a district takes, it's almost a full-time job in and of itself. And you're, like you said, you're doing the traveling to Madison and around the area, but there is no other way other than talking to in person as many people as humanly possible.
Yeah. I mean, it just takes an incredible amount of energy and hard work. There are no shortcuts. And I think sometimes you feel like, oh, if you just have the issues, or if you just have a certain hot button topic to get people. No, there's a lot of underlying work that has to be done, especially when at this point the numbers are not for you. You have to be able to maximize every one of your voters and maximize every one of your contacts. And it's a process. And that's one of the things. It's not something to be turned around immediately, but to have somebody like that who's willing to do the hard work, who has ideas in terms of what needs to be done, is a first step.
And I think a lot of people see the big numbers, the multi-million dollar races and all the TV ads, and you know, they think that it's all done at that high dollar level. But no, what those dollars pay for in part is to, you know, the campaigning at the grassroots level that people like Nancy and other volunteers do. There was a story from the area, and I know you were talking a bit about it, taking a few phone calls there are questions about whether a particular teacher up in that area was engaged in or using language that was, you know, anywhere from inappropriate to racist. Can you give a little background? Is that anything that's being like investigated, or is this just a, you know, a big local rumor mill? What's happening there?
Oh, it's actually been investigated and actually has been decided at this point. I first heard about it last week, last Monday. The school board met, and I'm watching the board meeting, and there were a lot of folks there. And there were speakers talking about this particular issue without being as specific, because we had not heard about this. We had a member of the Asian American community and a former board member who spoke, talking about how what was said and what was being done was unacceptable, and there's only one thing you could do. Again, there was no introduction into all this was going on. And then there were four different students who came up to speak in favor of this teacher, who is the band teacher at Wausau East, talking about how this teacher had made the band and made school. It was, you know, a glowing report. So we had basically these two sides. And the next day I happened to have the school board president, Jim Boucher, on my program. And he really couldn't talk about it, because he said he was, you know, basically the board was going to be a jury for this, could be a jury for this topic. But then within a day or so, it came out that there was an investigation. It did not actually go to the board. It was just an investigation. And that while some things that were said were inappropriate, the decision was made to put the teacher back in the classroom. Apparently, he had been not in the classroom for about 3 weeks. And obviously, it was a decision that upset members of the family of the student and also members of the Asian American community here in Wausau. There was, you know, put out a press release and basically was just livid about it. The district had put out a statement saying that this would be an opportunity, an educational opportunity, and I think it's very difficult to see how you couldn't, where you just brought them back into the classroom, based on, because it appears the evidence is agreed upon by everybody that some things were said that should not have been said.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and the school board, as if memory serves, and I may be overstating the case here, but essentially has what you'd call a conservative majority after some of the recent elections on there, and you now have a segment of the population that is outraged, but that the superintendent sends this letter out that said the teacher's language does not rise to the level of discrimination or harassment, but that it was insensitive and caused the children to feel unease. Well, that to me just sounds like a lot of legal hair splitting there. And when you really should be talking about what on the whole is good for the children, all the children, especially those in, you know, positions where they may feel targeted for who they are. So I'm not saying that, you know, we're going to solve it here, but obviously there's a part of the community still unhappy about this. And I'm very thankful that your show is following that. I've left you all of 10 seconds here to tell me if you got anything fun you want to talk about on today's show or the rest of the week.
Well, speaking of which, I have a former school board candidate, Jillian Bettino, coming on at 3:15.
Very good. All right. That's 2 to 4 on Bull Falls Radio. Chad Holmes, thanks so much. Always good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Pat.
All right. Have a great day. And we appreciate your being here as well. We will have another edition here, 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. But in the meantime, Earl Ingram next in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. Stephanie Miller in Madison. Todd Alba across the rest of the Civic Media Radio Network.